Extract. Learn more at Metamucil.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up, what agency of the federal government cannot account for trillions of dollars in spending of tax dollars? We'll find out in a moment. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we remembered D-Day, the Allied invasion of France, to push the Nazis out of that country. Here's what two listeners had to say following yesterday's program.
On D-Day, I'm from France, and what it means to me is I'm not doing a goose step. My parents both survived it, and they were very grateful to Americans for being there. I'm still emotional about it. All right, you have a good day. Thank you.
This is Teresa in St. Pete. I have a comment about today's show. The America that was 1944 to fight against the hate that is the Nazi Party no longer exists with this guy in the White House. He called Nazis fine people, and they're not fine people. And for him to be standing over Normandy where our men in 1944 died fighting that hate is a disgrace and a slap in the face to those men that died on the beaches that day and all through that war fighting that hate. He doesn't fight against the hate that is the Nazi Party. He is the hate that is the Nazi Party, and that's where he stands. He stands with the Nazis when he called them fine people. And to be standing in Normandy is a disgrace.
Well, there you have two listener comments that came after yesterday's program. You're listening to Radioactivity on WIMNF, where every day we bring you thoughtful guests who have a deep knowledge of the topics they discuss. Here we discuss everything from President Trump to foreign policy to state and local issues, all with an emphasis on facts and a commitment to WIMNF's mission of peace, equality, social, and economic justice. Well, earlier this week, President Trump was interviewed by Piers Morgan about the alleged bone spurs that kept him out of the draft during the Vietnam War.
You were not able to serve in Vietnam because of a bone spur condition in your feet. Do you wish you'd been able to serve? Would you like to have served your country?
Well, I was never a fan of that war, I'll be honest with you. I thought it was a terrible war. I thought it was very far away. Nobody ever, you know, you're talking about Vietnam, and at that time, nobody ever heard of the country.
Would you like to have served generally, perhaps in another?
I would not have minded that at all. I would have been honored, but I think I make up for it right now. And I think I'm making up for it rapidly because we're rebuilding our military at a level that it's never seen before.
President Trump earlier this week. Well, the president has made similar statements in the past. Hearing that, you might believe that the U.S. military is short on cash. Well, our next guest says the Pentagon cannot really account for the trillions of tax dollars it's been given over the years. Dave Lindorf is an award-winning reporter, a Nation magazine contributor. He writes for Salon, London Review of Books, and Tarbell.org. He's the author of four books. In the 1990s, in Hong Kong and China, he was the correspondent for Business Week. In an article for The Nation magazine, Lindorf wrote that although the Pentagon receives 54 cents out of every discretionary dollar in federal appropriations, the Pentagon failed a recent outside audit and for decades has failed to audit itself and account for the trillions of tax dollars it receives. And Dave Lindorf joins us right now on the phone. Dave, welcome to MNF. Good to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So let me ask you this. The president says he's rebuilding the military. Just from your perspective, if the Pentagon has never been audited successfully, how does the president know if the military needs more money?
Well, first of all, let's just talk about rebuilding the American military. The American military accounts for 34% of all military spending in the world. It's larger than 40% of all other military budgets combined, and that includes our allies, you know, France, Britain. I don't know whether people realize it, but the U.S. Veterans Administration budget alone, at over $200 billion, is larger than the entire military budget of China, which is the second largest military spender, and it's more than three times as large as the entire military budget of Russia, which is supposedly our existential enemy. I mean, this is just totally ridiculous to claim that the U.S. has to rebuild its military. We have a military colossus, but beyond that, you know, the article that I wrote looks at the fact that for as large as that military budget is, that military spending has not been audited for 30 years in total violation, deliberate violation of a congressional order in 1990 called the CFO Act that required all federal government departments and agencies to produce auditable budgets and to have annual audits. The Pentagon just stonewalled that for 30 years. They finally had an audit last year, for a whole year, over 1,000 auditors from some of the largest, most professional auditing firms in the country. And they just, last November, they finished what they could do, threw up their hands, and said, we can't do it. It was a totally failed audit. And Shanahan, the acting secretary of the Pentagon, I cannot bring myself to call it the Secretary of Defense. It's really the War Secretary, and we should get back to honest naming.
Wait a minute, what would you call it?
The War Department.
You call it the War Department as it was in the 1930s and
20s? You know, we used to call it when we honestly said it was a War Department. The Defense Department was name they came up with after World War II to justify, you know, so people wouldn't get upset that they were still spending as much as they were spending during the war. But Shanahan came out after that audit failure and said, well, we failed the audit, but we expected to. And then he said, we should get credit, though, for actually attempting an audit. But that's complete BS, because he failed to note that for 30 years they've been refusing to be producing an auditable budget. And well, 30 years is a long time.
Okay, so 30 years, but beyond that, you also point out in your article in The Nation magazine that the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, requires that every federal agency undergo an audit. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And so it's unconstitutional. It's a violation of a congressional act. It's just, I mean, people should be in jail and people should be fired from their positions. I've said that if this were, and we're not even getting to the fraudulent numbers, but yet, but the thing that is mind boggling to me, and your listeners should think about this, is that if any other agency you want to name in the federal government, the EPA, Health and Human Services, the Education Department, Labor Department, Department of Interior, you name it, any of these agencies were in blatant violation of a congressional law to have an auditable budget and were incapable of being audited by deliberate intent, people would be going ballistic. I mean, honestly, there'd be hearings in Congress, their heads would be rolling in those departments, it would be, members of Congress would be screaming on the floor of Congress, but because it's the military, nobody's saying a peep. Nobody. I mean, you know, Beto O'Rourke and Tulsi Gabbard are on the House Armed Services Committee. They're not saying anything about the outrage of the Pentagon not being able to be audited. They're not screaming about the fake numbers in their budgets, and you know, it's just unbelievable.
All right. So in 1990, the Congress says, okay, we want all of our government agencies to audit themselves or get an audit, and everybody but the Pentagon does. If I'm reading your story right. And then Shanahan, the defense secretary, I'll call him the defense secretary, acting defense secretary, he says the Pentagon is a $2.7 trillion organization. How does he know that?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's what they think it is. The Pentagon has for more than 20 years, and let's back up. There's an organization called the Defense Finance Accounting Service in Indianapolis, outside Indianapolis, at an Army base, has an army of auditors, of accountants, who are, you know, toting up the numbers all year of the Pentagon's income and expenditures. And they produce something that is purports to be an annual financial report on the Pentagon's assets and liabilities, which is then presented to Congress in support of each year's ever higher request for more money in its coming year fiscal budget. Fiscal year budget. That financial statement that they submit to Congress is full of fake numbers, which in the jargon of the Pentagon, and this is not an accounting term, are called plugs. They just make up numbers, literally make up numbers, because they don't have the ledger entries to support those numbers, and sometimes the made up numbers can total trillions of dollars, while the total Pentagon budget may only be, what they got for the year. Like last year, it was about $714 billion, but they'll have ledger entries for a trillion dollars or more. And the total number of these made up, there was a professor at the University of Michigan, Mark Skidmore, who, with a couple of his grad students, got a hold of the audits done by the Pentagon's own Office of Inspector General. They don't audit the whole Pentagon budget, but each year they pick some part of the budget. Often it's one service, like the Marines or the Navy or the Air Force, on a different year, and they try to audit their financial report. And when they do that, they have these plugs that they don't really, they point them out, and they say they're not supported by ledger entries, but they don't do anything about it, and nobody even talks about it. And so Mark and his grad students went through these documents, which were available on the OIG's website. They did 20 years of them and looked at them, and they added up all the plugs, assets and liabilities, added up to a total of $21 trillion in made-up numbers.
Yeah. $21 trillion. That's the
size.
Yeah,
but let's remember that this is not for the total Pentagon budget. It's only the total numbers they found in the audits, the partial audits that the OIG had done over those years. So really, it could be four times that. It could be $100 trillion. It's, I mean, it's ridiculous. And
this is on both sides of the ledger, both income and outgo.
Yeah. So I mean, some people have argued that, oh, this is all secret money flowing to the Pentagon. That's ridiculous. Mark and I have argued back and forth on this. He says, we don't know what it is. I can't say it's fake money and made up numbers, and that it's not real money. I agree, we don't know what it is. I would argue that it can't be on the scale that it might be, or that some people think it is, because if trillions and trillions of dollars were pouring into the economy that we didn't know about, we never would have had a fiscal crisis, because that would have been the ultimate stimulus spending that Obama couldn't get through Congress. He couldn't even get $1 trillion through Congress, and people say that's why the Great Recession lasted as long as it did and why we're still not out of it. But, you know, if there were trillions of dollars of secret money flowing into the economy through the Pentagon that was being either made up by the Fed and poured into the economy or something, the impact would be clear, either in inflation or, you know, higher economic activity or whatever. So I tend to go with what my sources told me, which is these are made up numbers. They're designed deliberately to deter Congress from doing any kind of oversight, because nobody wants to look like a tinfoil-hatted conspiracy theorist and ask about trillions of dollars of made-up numbers in the Pentagon. But that's what it is.
Our guest is Dave Lindorf, and we're talking about why the Pentagon has never passed an audit and why trillions of dollars are unaccounted for in the Pentagon budget. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Dave is an award-winning reporter. He's a Nation magazine contributor. And his Nation magazine article is entitled Exclusive, The Pentagon's Massive Accounting Fraud Exposed. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Let me just go back go back to 2001. Donald Rumsfeld, the day before 9/11, is holding a press conference on September 10th, 2001. And Rumsfeld says that according to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions. Now, this is Rumsfeld, who's then the Secretary of Defense back then. How does that fit into the story that you reported?
Well, that was the first time that a defense secretary actually acknowledged that this kind of crap was going on. And, you know, this happened on September 10th, 2001, which was an important day. I mean, that story that he when he came out, that was at a press conference. It was on all the major news channels that night as a lead item, and it was on people's doorsteps in the morning in their papers that there was this $2.3 trillion of unexplained, untraceable financial transactions in the Pentagon budget. But, of course, that morning was the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and the crashed plane in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and that was the end of that story. It just disappeared. That, you know, there were other things that were making the news after that. Nobody came back, you know, a month later and said, hey, what about the $2.3 trillion? That sounds really weird. I mean, the Pentagon budget at that time was like less than $500 billion and maybe $300 something billion. I can't remember. You know, the other thing that Rumsfeld said at that time was also important. He said the enemy, at his press conference, he said, the enemy, it turns out, of the United States is not Russia or China, but the Pentagon bureaucracy. That no Secretary of Defense that I know of in, you know, prior years or since has said anything like that, that powerful about the Pentagon bureaucracy, that they're basically, you know, committing massive fraud. But that is what it is.
Okay, so you say the fraud works like this. The Department of Defense does not spend all the money that Congress sends it, so in a given year. So instead of returning the money, you say that the Pentagon launders and shifts money to other parts of the DOD's budget. How does it do that?
Okay, so like any... and this is important, like any bureaucracy in government, and even sometimes in corporations, the Pentagon does not want to end the year not having spent all its money, right? I mean, they ask for money, and they're not going to be able to ask for more if they haven't spent what they got the year before. And they actually, under the law, if the Pentagon does not spend all the money that it's given in a given year, it has to give it back. The exception is that there are long-term projects, you know, like the F-35 or the trillion-dollar nuclear weapons upgrade, things like that, that are long-term, building a new air base or something like that, that take more than a year to do. And so the money for that is called like five-year money. There's three-year money and stuff, but mostly it's one-year money or five-year money. And the five-year money doesn't have to be returned because, you know, it's a big project. You can't tell how much you're going to spend in 1 year, so it rolls over to the next year, and at the end, of course, you have to account for it and give back. If it never happens, but I mean, if you didn't spend all the money you got, eventually you'd have to give it back. That's the law to the Treasury, but it never happens. The Pentagon doesn't give money back to the Treasury. What they do is they take, and this my sources told me about this. They will take money from one-year money and reclassify it as five-year money and shift it into budgets that that will hide it and keep it, you know, stored for future use, so that they can say it's all been spent and then ask for more money. And it's illegal. It's illegal to transfer money, and the Pentagon claims that it doesn't do that, but there's no way to document it because they have all these made-up numbers. So that, and the made-up numbers are the reason that the auditors haven't been able to do an audit. So
so where do they store the money? I mean,
they don't store it in these five-year programs.
So it's not stored in banks or anything like that.
No. I mean, it's money in their accounts. It's probably in the Treasury.
You know,
but most of the Pentagon's money is held in the Treasury, and they just get allocations whenever they need it.
My understanding is the founders of the country didn't like standing armies. So what they said that the military has to go back every year and get a new appropriation every year. So they're funded. This is my understanding. The founders wanted the military funded year to year because they didn't want the military to grow in power and do what militaries had done in Europe. But that's not – now we have military funding that goes out 5 years, not just year to year.
Yeah, that's been true for, you know, at least World War II.
Yeah.
And you can understand why it would be, but it is exactly what you're saying. It's like building an empire like they did in Europe in the rise of Hitler and things like that. So that's why – right now, we have a budget proposal that $733 billion in the House, $750 billion in the Senate, that is larger than any military budget in real dollars, constant dollars, since World War II. Bigger than even the Vietnam War, height of the Vietnam War, when we had 500,000 men and women in Vietnam. And that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous because we aren't even at war. I mean, really, the only thing that remotely qualifies as a war right now is Afghanistan, and that's only 15,000 or somewhere between 10,000 to 15,000 people in arms there for the U.S.
But you could say that we're in covert wars. We're in Yemen. We're in Syria.
Yeah,
we're in Syria. We're in Africa.
Things. They don't cost a lot of money. They're not. These aren't expensive operations. The big money is for things like the F-35, which is contrary to what people are told, that's not a fighter. It's the Air Force version, which is the major order of 2,000 something planes, is at $100 million a pop. This is a $1.5 trillion project to build stealth bombers capable of delivering nuclear bombs under the radar of modern developed countries in a first strike. That's what it is. It's a first strike nuclear bomber. Despite what anybody wants to say about it, it's such a bad fighter that they came up with a strategy of making it a bomber.
and it's the fighter that famously, at least right now, can't fly in thunderstorms, and we have thunderstorms all throughout Florida, and some of them were stationed at the Air Base Tyndall Air Force Base.
Oh, yeah, they were destroyed.
And destroyed during Hurricane Michael, yeah. Do we, that's a whole other story, but do you know anything more about...
I think at Tyndall, actually, it wasn't F-35s, it was F-22s
okay.
That were destroyed. But the F-35 is a plane that, classically, it was designed, as the Pentagon stupidly keeps trying to do, to be usable by the Marines who need a ground attack plane to defend the troops, the Navy, which needs planes that can take off and land on an aircraft carrier, and the Air Force, which needs sixth generation fighters, fifth or sixth generation fighters that can compete with the best fighters put out by China and Russia, and if you try to do all, and that also will be stealthy, so it can be a bomber, right, to sneak across borders and drop atomic bombs. And if you try to build something that can do all of those things, it can't do any of them well because you're making compromises everywhere. So the F-35 is a crappy fighter, and it's so crappy that they decided they have to equip it with these over the horizon anti-aircraft missiles, so it can actually fight approaching fighters before it actually visually sees them, because if they got too close, it would lose in a dogfight. So, so it's a crappy fighter. It'll never see combat against fifth generation enemy fighters ever. And so what they came up with was this idea of adapting it to carry two Nagasaki-size nuclear bombs, 50 kilotons, really twice the size of Nagasaki, I guess, a little more than twice the size of Nagasaki, that it would go under the radar and be part of a first strike on Russia, basically, maybe China, which we shouldn't even be thinking about. We shouldn't be
Well, let me tell our audience that Dave Lindorf is our guest. He's an award-winning reporter. He writes for The Nation magazine and also Salon, the London Review of Books. He was for a time a correspondent for Business Week, and we're talking about a story that he wrote several months ago for The Nation magazine about how the Pentagon has never been successfully audited. We're trying to figure out how much money the Pentagon actually has stashed away. And if you've got a comment or a question, you can call us up 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. So getting back to the big picture of the Pentagon, do we know how much money the Pentagon may have stashed away when the president said he's rebuilding the military and the military budget's been devastated? Do we know possibly how much money the Pentagon has it's still holding that's keeping secret from the public?
Yeah, my sources said that because they can stash the money away that they don't spend, that each year they're building up, you know, more of a slush fund that they can basically spend without having to account for it. And, you know, some of it will be for black ops. Some of it will be for, you know, covering up cost overruns. Some of it will be for doing secret weapons research that nobody wants to report on. You know, maybe like robotic soldiers, who knows. And my sources have said that fund is probably up around $100 billion now. That's just available to the Pentagon as it wants to use. And that's a lot of money. I mean, you can say, okay, so they have $750 billion to spend, but, you know, a lot of that is for salaries, for, you know, retirement benefits, for building maintenance and all kinds of stuff. But $100 billion goes a long way.
Is there anybody in Washington who's trying to get to the bottom of this? Anybody elected in Congress who's saying, look, we really have to complete an audit of the Pentagon and figure out how much money it really has and whether or not it's been decimated? They always blame President Obama for decimating the military. But has anybody said, look, we got to get to the bottom of this?
Yeah, ironically, it's Congressman Grassley, a Republican from Iowa, who has been the pit bull on this. And he, in the budget committee where he sits, he has railed at the Pentagon when their budget comes up and called he's the only one who's actually called top Pentagon officials to the mat and said, you know, you guys are, you know, he said in the last time he did this, he said last year, at about this time, he said, you know, I've read from, you know, experts who write about the journalists who write about this that the Pentagon is deliberately producing unauditable budgets, and I'm at this point ready to believe that that's the case, that you're deliberately making these budgets indecipherable. So he's been, you know, extremely harsh about it. But that's about it. You know, you would expect that some of these Democrats, particularly ones who have presidential aspirations on the House Armed Services Committee, which is now controlled by Democrats, would be screaming bloody murder about this stuff. But just to give you an idea of how bad it is, I'm working on a story right now about how the Navy wants to, is admitting that climate change is melting the Arctic and creating a navigable Arctic Ocean, so they want to get the funding to put ships up there and maybe eventually Navy bases up there to defend, you know, the U.S. coastline and to defend the efforts to drill for oil up there and American underwater territory, territorial claims on mineral rights and stuff. But and the article is about that and the irony of the Trump administration saying there's no climate change. Like Republicans are supporting this Navy effort while saying that they don't believe in climate change. But while in the course of doing that, I was talking with somebody, some expert who said I should talk to Langevin, the Democrat from Rhode Island on the Armed Services Committee, because he really raked the Pentagon for not providing that committee with detailed plans and costs of hardening American bases to accommodate the threats of climate change. And so I called their office and I talked to the press guy, and you know, so they're going to give me an interview, and it's great that he's being so concerned about climate change and challenging the Navy. But when I asked the press secretary, I said, oh, by the way, did you see my article in The Nation in December about the Pentagon's fraudulent financial statements to you guys for over the last 20 years? And he said, no, I hadn't heard about that. I just, what? I mean, geez, it was all over. The takeaway ran an 11-minute segment on it that went all over the country on NPR, and which Democrats presumably listened to. It was mentioned in the Washington Post when they did their fact check on AOC, when she cited the article, and then she got it a little bit wrong. She said it was $21 trillion in missing funds that could fund Medicare for All for 10 years. They did say in the fact check article that the Nation article was correct about the $21 trillion falsified numbers in the Pentagon's budget, which is the first time the Post has ever acknowledged that.
Dave, if somebody works for as a defense contractor or works in the military and sees some wrongdoing or some money that's being misspent or not spent as promised, can people be a whistleblower within the Pentagon or within the military contracting system?
Well, of course they could, but now these days people like that wind up going to jail, so it takes a little courage. Back in the 80s, whistleblowers were celebrated. I mean, the famous one is Chuck Spinney, who, you know, gave us the F-18s that the wheels were wings were falling off of, and the $600 toilet seats and things. And he was put on the cover of Time magazine. When's the last time you've seen a whistleblower on the cover of Time magazine these days? Yeah. We don't do that anymore. And instead, you know, people, one of the big whistleblower, of course, of all time is Assange, who is facing espionage charges in the U.S. And for years, the mainstream media, which runs his articles to get, you know, higher ratings and more readers, has been pillorying him and calling him, you know, a creep, and, you know, saying he put jeopardized national security and blah de blah. And so that's how whistleblowers get treated.
So, Dave, one last question, that is, there are a lot of hawks when it comes to government spending, and they look at the food stamp program and they look at other programs and they say this, you know, we've got bloated budgets when it comes to social needs, or bloated budgets when it comes to health care or education. The deficit hawks aren't really deficit hawks. You mentioned Grassley as being a hawk on the Pentagon budget. Have the deficit hawks come and held up your article and said to the government, look, we've got to go through with an audit. We've got to do something about this to find out how much of our tax dollars are wasted.
No, people turn away from it. People don't want to deal with it. Look, here's the problem. The problem is people worship the military ever since 9/11 especially. And so there's some notion that, you know, oh, the people in the Pentagon, people in uniform, they're all heroes, right? They're not heroes. They're the same bureaucratic, self-aggrandizing, power-hungry people that are in any bureaucracy. They just want to get more power and more money, and that's what they do. And they're not heroes. They elevate threats. They make up threats to get more money. They spend money that they don't need to spend so that they can finish off their budgets. They hide money so that they can ask for more the next year. There's a built-in escalator for Pentagon spending that's been going on now for generations that is creating this enormous drag on our social system, our economy, and everything else. I mean, you can't spend 50, it's now 57% of all discretionary spending. There's more being spent on the military now, $1.3 trillion, when you add all the different things like veterans benefits and everything else, and interest on the debt for the wars that are funded on debt. $1.3 trillion a year is the same amount that is collected each year in income tax and corporate taxes. Think about that. All of it. The rest of it is debt funding. So our entire tax payments each year when you fill out your tax bill are going to the military.
Well, Dave Lindorf, thanks a lot. Do you want to add anything else?
Yeah, I just think people ought to wake up and start screaming to their members of Congress to get to the bottom of this. I mean, we cannot continue as a country to be spending 35% of the entire world's military spending and 57% of our discretionary federal spending on military. It has to stop, and people have to wake up and say, wait, I want good schools. I want roads without potholes. I want, you know, college education for everyone like we used to have that you could afford and not, you know, be saddled with $60,000 in debt when you graduate. I want, I want action on climate change. I want all these things that we cannot have because we're just buried in Pentagon spending.
Dave Lindorf, thanks a lot. Do you have a website?
Yeah, thiscan'tbehappening.net.
thiscan'tbehappening.net. All right, Dave, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thanks for having me.
All right, great to have
bye-bye.
You, Dave. Bye-bye. Dave Lindorf is an award-winning reporter. He writes for The Nation magazine. You can see his writing also in Salon, the London Review of Books, and tarbell.org. And in a recent article for The Nation magazine, Lindorf wrote that although the Pentagon receives there, as he says, 57 cents out of every discretionary dollar in federal appropriations, the Pentagon has failed a recent outside audit and for decades has failed to audit itself and account for the trillions of tax dollars that it receives. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. And if you want to comment about something you've heard here so far, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. And email address, dj@wmnf.org. And here's an email from Sean in Tampa. Sean writes, Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex. And he said, paraphrasing, every dollar spent on unnecessary military spending is stolen from the most needy among us. That's Sean in Tampa. Sean, thanks a lot. I'll see if I can pull up the actual quote from Eisenhower. And David writes this. He said, I think that Eisenhower is the last true Republican leader. After his presidency ended, the Republican Party went downhill, and all the rhinos came out of the woodwork. This crazy deficit spending is antithetical to responsible, transparent economic policy, writes David. Well, if you want to comment, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. I'm going to mention some other news stories that we can talk about, and we'll see where you want to take this conversation. Governor DeSantis' office still has not released public records for the trip that he and 98 people from Florida, including Florida's three elected cabinet members, took to Israel in May. The Florida Phoenix requested the records nearly 7 weeks ago. The Phoenix asked on April 16th about how much the May 24th through 31st expedition to Israel would cost taxpayers, what agencies and domestic or overseas groups might be chipping in toward the costs, the governor's itinerary, and whether any state, federal, or overseas agencies were participating. Asked yesterday about the status of the request for information, the governor's office said it had received the request, but that's about all it said. The long public response time is absolutely ridiculous and probably a violation of the state public records law, says Barbara Peterson, president of the Florida First Amendment Foundation. So we could talk about that. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, and email address, dj@wmnf.org. The New York Times is reporting that regarding military spending. The New York Times is reporting this. Let's see if I can pull up the article about arms sales to Saudi Arabia. When the Trump administration declared an emergency last month and fast-tracked the sale of more American arms to Saudi Arabia, it did more than anger members of Congress who opposed the sale on humanitarian grounds. It also raised concerns that the Saudis could gain access to technology that would let them produce their own versions of American precision-guided bombs, weapons they have used in strikes on civilians since they began fighting a war in Yemen 4 years ago. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. The federal government is opening a new mass shelter for migrant children near the U.S.-Mexico border and is considering housing children on three military bases to add 3,000 more beds to the overtaxed system in coming weeks. And the University of Alabama appears poised to give back $21.5 million donated by a Miami philanthropist who called on students to boycott the Alabama school over the state's new abortion ban. The philanthropist, Hugh Culverhouse Jr., son of the former Bucks owner, says he has no doubt that this is about his abortion remarks causing controversy, but Alabama says the dispute has to do with Culverhouse's attempts to dictate how his donation is to be used. The trustees at the University of Alabama today will decide whether or not to return the $21.5 million and strip Culverhouse's name from the law school, too. U.S. hiring slowed in May as employers added just 75,000 jobs, a sign that businesses have become more cautious in the face of slowing global growth and widening trade conflicts. The tepid growth, along with rising pressure on the economy, makes it more likely that the Federal Reserve will cut rates in the coming months. Bond yields fell after the jobs data was released at 8:30 this morning, signaling that investors expect there will be lower Fed rates. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to David in Lake Wales. David, you're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, Rob. Excellent show, as usual. Disturbing, though. And I just want to add, not sure if you've seen it, but there was a movie put out in 2006 called Why We Fight.
Yeah, we gave it away during a marathon, yeah.
You did? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's it's quite a movie. And, you know, there's a lot of Eisenhower said a lot more than just the famous quote that most people recall. And I don't know. I don't know when these problems are going to be addressed. It seems as though things just get worse and worse. We're spending so much on the military and so little on things that really matter. I don't understand who it is that we're actually afraid of. And now this stuff with Cuba all over again, it's just another attempt to take us back 50 years for some reason. I don't understand that. What is the point of making more trouble now with Cuba? I just it's just crazy.
Yeah, do you feel like Cuba is a threat to you or your family?
Of course not.
Yeah,
it's not a threat to anyone.
The White House, through executive order, this week said that it's not going to allow cruise ships to go to Cuba. It's going to limit the way Americans can travel to Cuba through other means. And a boat carrying St. Petersburg Mayor Rick Kreisman was headed to Cuba. He was on a cruise ship to Havana on Wednesday, and the boat had to turn away from Cuba and land in the Bahamas. So Mayor Kreisman,
not that.
Yeah.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, isn't it silly?
All right, David, thanks a lot. Thank you. All right. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. Let's go back and listen to President Eisenhower's farewell address, where he talked about the money that is taken out of our economy and put into the military-industrial complex. Here's President Eisenhower.
I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell.
This speech did not get very much attention. When a new president is coming to power, as John Kennedy was, the spotlight was not on Dwight Eisenhower.
We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions.
There was a feeling at the time that this must have been written by some speechwriter who just sneaked into the speech.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
3 months ago, we got contacted by a family up in Minnesota saying that we have documents from Malcolm Moose. He was responsible in part for drafting the military-industrial complex speech.
These new papers give us written evidence that this was not just some caprice of Eisenhower's or something by some speechwriter.
You see the evolution of his speech from May 1959 to 1961.
And that was a spokesperson for the Eisenhower Library. Before that, we heard historian Michael Beschloss. And we also heard President Eisenhower's own words. Let's see if I can get a better version of that speech where President Eisenhower is warning about the dangers of the military-industrial complex. This is from January 17th, 1961, as President Eisenhower stepping down.
The President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations.
All right, I guess we're not going to find the right soundbite. Okay, that's what happens when you're trying to do it on the fly. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Yes, Rob. It's no surprise that Trump is implementing these policies against Cuba, because that's was one of Obama's great things that he did there, open up Cuba. And just when we're starting to get relations with him, he has to go ahead, among other things that Obama had, and try to go ahead and just dismantle whatever progress Obama made, because in my opinion, he's so jealous of him, and that he just doesn't have anything to stand on like Obama did, not even temperament or anything else, or in skill. So now, of course, he's over in England calling the mayor a stone cold loser. The mayor saying that he wouldn't respond to an 11-year-old child, and then he goes, and then of course they're calling the first lady over there nasty. It just goes on and on. And now did you see where with the interview with Laura Ingraham, where he said that he felt that Nancy Pelosi was vindictive. Everyone calls her Nancy nervous. You know, this is all projection on his part. And just the interview with Laura Ingraham calling her name, and saying that Mueller, I don't know if you heard this too, he said that Mueller made a fool out of himself. Did you hear that?
Yeah, that was all over cable news this morning. Danny, you're a big cable news guy.
Oh, man, you are
a huge cable news guy. Yeah, I think everybody that watched cable news this morning knows that. But the question is, and do you think that the president was right to criticize House Speaker Pelosi when he was over there in front of the cemetery in Normandy?
Definitely not. Yeah. And Pelosi at least waited till he was back over here on this soil before she started criticizing him.
Well, what do you think that says about the president?
It says a lot about him, Rob. A lot of things that we said before he even got elected. I mean, I remember when back then he was talking about his temperament. He said, I've got the best temperament ever. And it was like, and Tom Hanks did a spoof on that on Saturday Night Live during the campaign. He went, all right, stop laughing, entire planet.
Now, Pelosi did say that she wanted to send President Trump to prison. I think she made that remark.
Yes, she did.
In a meeting before she left.
That's a pretty big statement.
All right, she left for France. But here's the thing. Sean Hannity last night, as you know, because you're a big TV watcher, last night said, well, this is beyond the pale for Nancy Pelosi to say that President Trump should be put in prison. But yet, how many times did you hear lock her up during the presidential campaign and since then? I mean, the president he's not shy away from telling who he thinks should be locked up. I mean, he used that chant against Hillary Clinton and encouraged that over and over again. But now Sean Hannity thinks that saying somebody should go to prison is beyond the pale. What do you think of Sean Hannity? I think he's on both sides of that issue. I think Sean Hannity cheers the lock her up chant when it's aimed towards Hillary Clinton. He's not cheering it when it comes to to President Trump.
Well, hypocrites. And can you imagine if during Obama's administration he would have had a relationship with somebody on MSNBC like Sean Hannity has with Fox? They would want to go ahead and impeach him for that, So I mean, this is just a hypocrite. That's what they are. I skim across it. And I said they're just for a few laughs. And I don't know if you've ever seen Saturday Night Live, Kate McKinnon. She's so talented, right? Have you ever seen her imitate Laura Ingraham?
Yeah, I think Kate McKinnon is one of the best comedians ever.
Yeah. You know, that woman, I tell you what, can you actually ever see yourself interviewing Laura Ingraham without off the record? You know, like, you know, not for just an interview, for just, you know, talking to her and everything and talking about difference. Do you actually think you could get through that?
I don't know. Danny, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Peter in Tampa. Peter, what's on your mind today?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say a couple things. One, rather than presenting the Democrats as a kind of, positive alternative to the Republicans, when you look at the military-industrial complex, which you were just talking about, you know, we spend $800-plus billion every year on the military, but it's not as if the Democrats spend any less than the Republicans. The fact is, if you're voting for either party, you're voting for the military-industrial complex. You're voting for spending $800 billion a year on war and weaponry rather than on, you know, clean energy or education or healthcare. I really do not think the Democratic Party is an actually, like, different option in that respect. The other thing I want to bring up...
I think Dave Lindorf, my guest, pointed that out. He said the only person in Congress who's screaming about, you know, let's get an audit done to the Pentagon is Charles Grassley, a senator who's a Republican from Iowa. I think Dave pointed that out pretty clearly.
All right. So, right. So the Democrats really are just as much a part of that as the Republicans.
Yeah, I think Dave pointed that out pretty clearly. Anyway, what's your second point?
My second point would be about Julian Assange. UN Special Rapporteur on Torture has just said that Julian Assange's treatment is tantamount to torture, and he's going to die in jail.
Yeah, he's very sick, and Amy Goodman has been reporting on that for the last few days.
Well, that's great, but where are the leaders in the Democratic Party, like a Bernie Sanders, defending freedom of the press and defending Julian Assange? He is a political prisoner, and he is being persecuted because he published documents that were true and newsworthy, but the United States government doesn't like what he published.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
Outrage.
Peter, thanks a lot. I think we've got to pay attention to what's Assange's treatment, no doubt about it. And I think Amy Goodman has really been doing a good job about that. Let's go to Susan on Anna Maria. Hey, Susan, you're on M&F.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. Yeah, I'm still kind of ticked off over Cuba, but that's, you know, you did a show on that. The whole Biden thing, I'm not a big fan of Biden, but the fact that he walked back the Hyde Amendment, I mean, that's the thing with politicians. You either believe in it or you don't. And so he took some flack for it, so he walked it back. And, you know, that just shows typical politician. Now, if he does get the nomination, of course I would vote for him. I'd vote for Ronald McDonald or Bobo the Chimp, but...
Even though Biden doesn't seem to stand for anything, I mean, what are Biden's principles? I want to know, after he changed his stand on abortion last night, what does he really stand for? Isn't that what you want to know?
Exactly. And you know, I think I said yesterday on your program, when you gather information and you change your mind, that's fine. But there's nothing new with the Hyde Amendment. He didn't find out anything new that he looked at it and said, oh, yeah, you know what? Now that I look at that, I think I'm going to change my mind. So it's just typical politician, and I myself am not a fan of Biden.
Yeah, and this is not an endorsement or a de-endorsement of Biden, but I think people tend to vote for somebody that seems to have a strong character, a strong commitment to values, and a strong idea about where they want to head the country. And they don't want somebody to vacillate. They want somebody to say, this is where I stand. This is where I'd like to lead the country, and please come with me. And when Biden, you know, backtracks on something that he stood firm on, what kind of leader will people vote for? Somebody like that? I don't know.
Right, and Rob, the way they look at it, they believe that he, you know, he is a strong leader. Well, you're not a leader. I mean, tell us what, you know. Don't.
What principles do you stand on? Yeah. Susan, thanks a lot.
It's just what's popular.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Susan. Have a great weekend. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 or record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. I'm Rob Lurie. Have a great weekend. Frank Knox has been our phone producer today. Mac Rebenack died yesterday of a heart attack. He was 77 years old. So much great music, played with so many great bands, too, over the years. Let's go out with some Dr. John. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg.
Live.